This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine crisis. London headlines warn of worse ahead. For example, Russia-Ukraine latest news. Ukraine recaptures territory near Kherson. This is Kherson Oblast at the gateway of the Crimea. In counteroffensive, for example, you're a Cossack now, Ukrainians tell Boris Johnson and his freedom-loving hair. For example, UK missiles help to chase Russian Navy fleet from Black Sea coast. For example, Russia steals 600,000 tons of grain from occupied Ukraine. I welcome Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, to comment on Ukraine crisis now from the point of view of what we see, the two sides, NATO and the Russian Federation, lining up to conduct this war in the Donbass, but also along the Black Sea coastline, looking at Odessa and the grain fleet. Hence the allegation by the Secretary of State, Mr. Blinken, that Russia is using the grain fleet and the storage of foodstuffs that the world is asking to be delivered, using it as blackmail to have sanctions lifted. Gregory, you're back from Australia, so I'm holding you to comment on not only the European tussle with the Russian Federation, but also in particular the UK, no longer part of the EU, but certainly a prominent part of NATO. At this point, what is NATO's ambition? Is it to roll back the Russian forces from Ukraine? Is it regime change in Moscow? Is it to bring in new neighbors and to dig a ditch from the Baltic to the Black Sea? What is the plan? Because they're meeting at the end of the month. What can we expect? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, I don't think NATO has a plan. It just wants to survive. And the reality is that it ran out of a mission in 1991 with the collapse of the Soviet Union. The stated mission of NATO at that time was to confront the Soviet Union. Now, the Soviet Union does not exist. Post-Soviet Russia, in fact, wanted to join NATO, and in fact, Prime Minister Thatcher and President Reagan talked about this unification, if you like, of interests between post-Soviet Russia and Western Europe and the rest of NATO as being one of the objectives. So now NATO has no objective. It no longer is the efficient military organization it was during the 1980s. It is politically divided. It's operationally in decline. We see Sweden and Finland wanting to join, Turkey trying to block that they're joining NATO. The reality is that NATO is not cohesive, could not really effectively be a military force in its own right. But of course, then the post-Soviet Russia is no longer a major military power either in that sense, in that it would invade Western Europe. So basically, we see NATO just fighting to continue its existence, and particularly Jens Stoltenberg, the Secretary General of NATO, continuing to look for a job. Now, within the NATO countries, however, you've got some with very personal agendas which are anti-Russian, which really helps support the Biden administration's anti-Russian approach. And that includes Boris Johnson, of course, because he is personally xenophobically anti-Russian and has encouraged the U.S. UK security services to follow that line. And there's no real understanding as to what made him so anti-Russian. There's no question during the Cold War we could understand being anti-Soviet, but the post-Soviet situation is very different. And of course, Canada also, because of the political leanings of, for example, the Deputy Prime Minister of Canada, who is a Ukrainian extraction, she is vehemently anti-Russian. So you've got all of these little bits and pieces contributing to what NATO is supposed to be thinking and doing and why it's existing today. But they're not really presenting themselves as a strong and coherent force capable of doing anything, while some other NATO members, like Germany, for example, or Hungary, are actively trying to hold the line and say, look, let's not turn this into a major confrontation. They're opposed to the sanctions which the US has forced on Russia, and this has caused a lot of economic hardship in Western Europe and will cause a hell of a lot more. And when Blinken, U.S. Secretary of State Blinken, says that Russia is stealing Ukraine grain to sell it around the world so that they'll blackmail the West into lifting sanctions, this really is way, way, way too far. The interesting thing is that, yes, there are Ukrainian grain stocks still held onshore in Ukraine and in ships in Ukrainian harbors. But the reality is that they're stuck there because the Ukrainian government has mined the entrance to Odessa harbor, for example, so you can't get the ships out of there. That's, the Russians didn't do that. The Ukrainians did that ostensibly to stop the Russians from invading Odessa. Now, we saw on just yesterday that Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov said that Russia, in conjunction with Turkey, a NATO member, would guarantee the safe passage of Ukrainian grain shipments to the world markets. Hopefully it's not just the grain shipments, but also the fertilizer shipments, because the shortage of grain is one thing. The shortage of fertilizer shipments around the world is causing enormous damage. Look at the situation in Sri Lanka today, population 22 million, and it has become a bankrupt country because it chose not to import chemical fertilizers, such as the one Ukraine sells. So the damage of interrupting the global grain and fertilizer market is profound and will get worse. But again, President Zelensky in Ukraine didn't have to go along with this idea that he should renew his attacks on the Russian-speaking parts of Ukraine. This was, over the last less than a year, when he kept escalating his war against the Russian speakers of Ukraine and against Russia itself. And of course, Russia really was goaded into responding by attacking Ukraine. Big mistake. Russia got sucked into that. But the reality is that Zelensky could have cut this short earlier. So could the Biden administration. But we are moving with this whole thing into a global food shortage. And one of the other things we're seeing is that over the last year, we've seen documentation on about 30 major attacks on U.S. food production plants, including some of the destruction of some entire plants, but also the destruction of large amounts of U.S. food stocks. And you have to ask, is this part of something more comprehensive in terms of creating a global food crisis?
About the ambitions of NATO, I do have accounting of bigger and stranger weapon systems being directed into Ukraine, or we're told they are, not just from the U.S., but also from other NATO members. For example, I know in specific, there's a ground-to-air system from Germany. There's a shore-to-ship system that can be carried by two men from Sweden. We know that the U.K. is sending very good weapons. They boast about them all the time. For example, anti-ship weapons to trouble the Russian fleet off of Ukraine. Pouring these weapons in there is a way of sustaining the war. Does that help NATO to sustain the war, to keep it going beyond expectation of Donbass?
Well, what you have for the really pro-NATO Europeans, particularly Jens Stoltenberg, for example, they're very happy to see Ukraine, which is effectively being shut out of potential NATO membership, being a de facto NATO member by feeding massive amounts of US and British and some other European weapon systems. The Brits can talk all they like about having driven the Russian fleet from the Black Sea coast of Ukraine. The reality is that the Ukrainian weapon systems themselves, such as the Neptune anti-ship missile system, which destroyed Russian cruiser Moskva recently, they've got enough of their own systems there that they don't really need imported systems for that. Where they've benefited is getting from the US and UK supplies, has been getting anti-tank guided weapons and also short-range air defense weapons, which have been targeting the Russian helicopter gunships and helicopter troop transports around the war zone. But the reality is that the war is being forced into its terminal phase now, as Russia really is coming close to having achieved its major objectives.
Another observation, just from the headlines in London. I can't read the Paris headlines. I can't read the Berlin headlines. So the explanation is that the reason NATO is prosecuting this war is that the Russians are criminals, in the way that the Germans were made into criminals in the first war, the depredations visited upon Belgium, the burning of libraries, and the horrors visited on civilians who were fleeing the German advance. Is that part of NATO's scheme to not only defeat Russia, but to villainize the Russian forces?
Well, of course, in fact, this is particularly part of the U.S. State Department's approach, which has used a technique called pseudo-speciation. In other words, rendering your adversary in the minds of your audience, rendering the adversary into something less than human so that you can do anything to it and you are justified. So by vilifying Putin and vilifying anybody who actually has met him in a way of saying, well, because they are friends of Putin, we can take all of their assets, legally or illegally, without any recourse or opposition, just because they're Russian or friends of Putin. In fact, a number of the people who've been vilified by the US and European sanctions have been Russians who have been profoundly against the conflict with Ukraine, and yet they're still seeing their assets just arrested and stolen. Now there's a yacht worth about $350 million sitting in London right now, and the owner is not sanctioned by the West, but yet his yacht has been seized and arrested without legal grounds. Now what we are seeing is this whole approach is turning Western democracies into societies which will and can and will act illegally with impunity. So what does that say for the rule of law in the Western world? What does it say for democracy? It's a travesty.
I want to go to Moscow next, because war end, what does it look like from Moscow's point of view? I'm speaking with Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, who's just back from Australia. And we'll involve ourselves with what Moscow and London can do to end this conflict. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.